I'll reconvene the hearing, and we have Mark for going to speak.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm just going to speak to a few points from my legal submissions and in response to the Council's opening legal provision submissions and summary statements. So I haven't got a summary, but I haven't got a funeral in Dunedin yesterday, so I'll just arrived back from Dunedin. So.
Yes, a colleague told us about that.
So just
before you start, I don't know if you were made aware, but Ms. Scott amended her submissions in terms of the existing environment slightly to say that it was a consideration but not mandatory. And you probably need to know that before you start your submissions.
Yes, sir. Thank you. First point, covered in my legal submissions, what I highlight is the consent background which has led to this submission. I was involved in both the previous conflict consent applications. They were long, difficult battles. The reality is we have a litigious environment in Queenstown. We have no Maori issues, no regional council issues, and we have one of the most litigious environments in the country, which never ceases to amaze me. Mostly about landscape. And like it or not, there are people who don't care about ski fields or access roads or safety or dust or anything else. They just care about not seeing any structures on an ONL. So you get notified and you end up in debates. I table those consents, but where my client is coming from is, can that basic situation be reviewed? Is there a better way of achieving a gondola from Valley Floor to Mountaintop? And looking at my map, which I'm sure is quite clear to you by now, the plan that I handed around, all my client is concerned about is a 400 metre gap between control. What looks very likely like controlled above and what looks very likely like controlled below. And there's a 400 metre gap. Our case is fact specific. It's nothing to do with anybody else's extensions. I'm not trying to create a precedent for anybody else. What we're saying is look at the facts of this case and look at the appropriate planning solution for this case on these facts. Other people's arguments are different and entirely up to them. And what we're trying to achieve, what my club wants to achieve, is controlled activity through the gap to avoid the consequences that Mr. Brown described as, at that stage, restricted discretionary, the whole thing becomes restricted discretionary because of bundling. Ms. Banks and the council are opposing that, which essentially means what they're pursuing is almost the status quo. Now, I acknowledge in the rural general zone there's a change from discretionary to restricted discretionary. But the reality is the restricted discretion criteria include landscape and visual amenity criteria, and consent can be declined. So I'm not sure if I'm going to apply how real the difference would be between restricted discretionary and discretionary, because the same issues are going to end up being debated. So there's quite a gap between the two parties' positions. And what we're looking for is controlled activity. I highlight the fact, I'm sure you'll be aware, that some effort. I think we managed to persuade Dr. Reed to change her position, and she has now, in her summary statement, says that she considers that the bespoke MCS extension would not cause any adverse effects on the landscape of the city that not already anticipated. So our landscape issue appears to have gone away. Or to put it another way, the council's landscape expert and MCS's landscape expert are virtually on the same page on that issue. Yet despite that, the council is still defending its position that the gap should be restricted discretionary. Second point I wanted to make clear is that I get the impression from reading Ms. Banks' evidence that she's concerned about consenting a gondola route to the top of Mount Cadrona, and there should be some hearing somewhere where you look at all the alternatives and decide which is the best. We are not seeking to consent a gondola to the top of Mount Cadrona. If you look at my Appendix 1, and I didn't mention my legal submissions, but that is Mr. Espy's Appendix 1, except I had placed a black dot in the middle of the cell, just to the left of 12. Mr. Brown's evidence refers to a car park consented on MCS land within the ski area subzone. The consented car park's where that black dot is. And I actually have a few pictures of a plan of the consented car park here. And it's where this indicative gondola route changes course. Now, if you've been on site, you will know that below that dot down to the highway isn't much of an altitude loss. It's a wide, sweeping road, well-formed, doesn't climb much, corners are easy to navigate, could easily be sealed without road widening because it's already there, because that black dot's situated on the next plateau above the MCS zone. Above the black dot, the road gets really gnarly. It gets narrow and windy, and people get scared, and the old vehicle falls off. There's dust, and there's a whole bunch of issues above that black dot, and there's a car parking issue at the top of the ski field. Mr. Brown's evidence outlines to you the potential options relating to this potential gondola route. And option one, quite frankly, is a gondola which starts at the black dot with its base station. So you drive to there, very easy to do, doesn't cause any problem. You get on the gondola there and you go to the top. That's option one. Option two is a gondola that goes the full length from the middle of the MCSS zone and just turns a corner at that point. Option three is a version of option one. You have a primary gondola from the black dot upwards, and you have a little feeder chair down to the village, which you could quite easily do. So put just a small chair, much cheaper, more cost effective, to get you from the village up to the base station of the gondola, and then you hop off the chair and get onto the gondola and go to the top. And option four is a combination with two stations. So there's a range of options. Because of the characteristics of the MCSSZ and the ski area subzone and the consented car park and the plateaus, there's a range of options. So we're not seeking to consent a gondola up to the top of Mount Cadrona. It can already be done inside the ski area subzone from that black dot, probably as a controlled activity. And of course, one of the ironies, if we lose this submission and we stay discretionary, if someone comes along and wants to consent this gondola, and I'm the strategic advisor, I'm going to say, well, consent the top part first. Start at the black dot and go up and get a controlled activity consent and come back to the second half later. So, being quite open, I don't like district plans which encourage you to go to devices to achieve an outcome. Rather be able to have the gondola controlled top to bottom and economic decisions come into it then, and practical and operational decisions. The third point I wanted to touch on is complexity. Without going to all of the bits, but there's a theme in the evidence of Ms. Banks and the submissions of Ms. Scott that they are opposing the MCS extension because it makes the plan too complex. Ms. Scott says in her paragraph 2.6, at the last sentence, the core activities permitted under the existing SASZs are excluded from the bespoke provisions, further demonstrating the complexity of the planning framework being pursued. I have a real difficulty with that statement. I want to look at complexity in two different areas. Big picture. The ODP ski area subzones are excluded from the ONL categories. The bespoke set of provisions operated happily for 20 or 30 years. Under the proposed district plan, and the reason for that is probably obvious. If you've ever flown from Queenstown to anywhere and you fly over the snow park, it looks like an open cast mine. I mean, in ski areas, every other summer the bulldozers get out and they change paths and they create new paths. You build structures, you have buildings, you have cars, you have people, you have parking. Everything that happens there is almost antithetical to what an ONL should be. Which is why they're excluded in the ODP. The PDP has created a hybrid, as I understand it, where the ONL policies, objectives and policies apply, But the methods don't. Or the assessment matters don't. So you end up with a hybrid regime which somehow starts from an objective and policy regime designed to give the highest level of protection to ONLs and ends up with a rule regime which lets you do anything you like in SASZ. How you get there without creating a tension of some sort in the plan, I'm not sure. And I'm not here to discuss that because I'm not revisiting the words. The point I'm making is that looking at the council stuff, documents for this hearing, that hybrid regime has been misinterpreted by at least two or three experienced planning board landscape witnesses. Because of that, Ms. Banks went to some considerable length to explain how it all works. And Ms. Scott obviously thought Ms. Banks didn't get it quite right, because she in her opening submissions gave another detailed explanation of how it all works. And the overriding mantra we've been getting through all of these hearings is that the council is seeking to make this plan easier, simpler, and easier to administer. And how that relates to a hybrid regime that a lot of people are misunderstanding, has to be explained twice, is a bit beyond me. So compare the complexity, and there is complexity there, of the regime being created with the MCS extension. We want two lines on a map, an A on a map, and two little rules that says only passenger lift systems excluding buildings. How is that complex? How is that difficult to understand? And yet, the council planner and the lawyer, it's so complex they're having trouble grappling with it, and it's so complex that they're saying it's going to cause administrative problems down the track to future generations of council planners. Well, the facts just don't support the contention. I get the feeling sometimes, commissioners, to be slightly humorous perhaps, that walking through that door is like Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole. Outside, the common sense is common sense, and obvious is obvious, and you can see what you can see, and you fall down the rabbit hole, and everything turns upside down. What was complex becomes simple, what was simple becomes complex. How anybody could say what this submission is requesting is going to add the complexity to the district plan is completely beyond me. And I invite you to conclude that to the extent that the council opposition to this extension, this relief, is based upon alleged additional complexity to the plan, I invite you to conclude that the facts do not support it and that the conclusions are unreliable and you should not take account of them. Two or three comments in response to Council's opening. We had a junior here dutifully taking notes, which she's delivered to me, and listened to the transcript. Just three or four points. A whole existing environment issue. I find it again interesting that the Council's primary 42A report and evidence was based upon the Snowline Gondola being part of the environment. That was the basis. Dr. Reed, Ms. Banks, that was the starting point. And that led to cumulative effects issues and so on. I looked at that and thought, I'm not sure I agree with that. But I said to I instructed my witnesses, that's the council's position, which I assume has been briefed. So therefore, and it's the worst case scenario, so when you're preparing your planning and landscape evidence, please assume, in fact I'm directing you to assume, that Gondola is part of the existing environment. And then in Ms. Scott's opening submissions, she is saying that my witnesses are asserting that it's part of the environment, and then she goes on to challenge my witnesses' assertion. All we were doing was responding to the council's case. My case, my submission remains that to be part of the existing environment, it has to be likely, and that the onus on the person alleging likelihood, the onus is on them to establish the facts that support that. And I understand from my colleague, Ms. Galloway, that you may still be grappling with this issue. From our point of view, I don't think it's relevant. I mean, two landscape people are in agreement. There's no adverse effects. I don't care whether there's no landscape part of the existing environment or not. It makes no difference. The landscape minister's recipe actually thinks it could be a plus having two of them because then it's a recreational area. But either way, it is of no moment to my case. But given that you may still be grappling with it generally, I don't know whether one course of action that you might want to consider is directing the council in its right of reply to go out and make a couple of phone calls and find out a bit of information. I mean, that snow line, the top and the bottom are now in different ownerships. They will find out. I think the top is owned by the council or some trust owned by the council. Well, surely the council or the trust knows whether they're going to order a gondola. If you were to make inquiry, and I'm not trying to give evidence here, but you know, if you were to make an inquiry, you'd find out that these things cost 25 to 50 million and higher. You've got to order them from Europe. There's a year lead time. Snowman gondola consent expires in May 2018. If they're going to build it before, they're going to build it next summer. If they're going to build it next summer, it's already ordered. And if it's already ordered, the whole town knows about it. Now, those are just things out in the real world that we all know, which if you wanted to make an inquiry of the council, I'm sure those are the answers you're going to get. So I doubt it would be very difficult for you to ask for and get information which would lead you to a conclusion that the snowman gondola at least is unlikely. I can't speak for Triple Car. It's a whole different kettle of fish. And finally, on this point, I find it interesting that also in the opening comments, the statement was made by council that in the district plan, the council would find it difficult in district plan review for the council to have to get evidence for each unimplemented consent to decide whether it will be implemented or not. This would create an absurd result. Well, yeah. How often has the situation arisen in these hearings? This is like they have to go out and look at every consent. It's one very good example. Everybody's assuming all the building platforms have been already built on. They're all consented. No one's even raising a question mark about whether they're going to be built on. Part of the work we base the study, everything else. No one's drawing everybody to ask them. It's a reasonable assumption based upon the facts and on what was held by the Environment Court of Court. So, in this case, given the council was asserting it, they could have made a few phone calls and found out. And you could get at that information if you wanted to. Now, the third point, my notes, you were told the evidence before you should satisfy the statutory test relevant to a plan change, which I agree. The statement was made that what has almost occurred is that because submitters are essentially seeking a bespoke corridor only for a gondola and excluding under SAA, it is almost a quasi-consent application. The panel needs to step back and apply the test, what is the most appropriate zoning. I agree with the last sentence. The first sentence, this is not a quasi-consent application. There's no plans, there's no pylons, there's no visual assessment of details. All we are asking for is a district plan framework that would enable that consent through a controlled activity status. That's all we're asking for. And in my submission, the evidence before you on this site, on these facts, justifies it. And the final point I wanted to challenge was the comment that there's a reference to the broadened purpose of the SASZ. The zone purpose has been recommended to expand and cover a broader purpose. Agreed. Submitters are now using this proposed change to submit their changes. Commissioners, we didn't split these hearings. We lodged a submission, which had the words and the maps and everything else together. We expected to come to a hearing. No criticism here. It's been split for reasons I fully understand, and you know. But let's be honest. On this issue, I've now come to evidence for the strategic directions hearing, the rural chapter, and now this one. Three hearings on one submission. That's costing big time. Everybody involved. So it wasn't out. So we didn't split the hearing. We would happily have come to one hearing and presented it all at once. So it's a bit not quite right for the council to change that we're somehow taking advantage of the split to somehow bring something different now that we hadn't advanced at the beginning. We advanced our submissions on the words to get to the end we wanted to get to. It's all on the same submission. So I reject that criticism. I have one comment to make on Ms. Banks' summary of evidence. I perhaps need to ask you to turn to Ms. Banks' summary, if you can find that quickly. It was presented on Monday. That's one example which in my submission highlights Ms. Banks' failure to apply theory to fact. Page 1 of her submission, paragraph 123. She quotes the SAS purpose in chapter 21. And as you read this purpose, I want you to bear in mind that we are trying to get controlled activity for a 400 metre gap to enable a gondola from valley floor to mountaintop for skiing and other recreational activities. The purpose of the ski area subzones is to enable the continued development of ski area activities as year-round destinations for ski area, tourism and recreational activities within the identified subzones where the effects of the development are cumulatively minor. Next sentence. The extension of the subzone down to lower hill slopes and across wide geographic areas where skiing does not occur conflicts with this purpose. Well, I'm sorry. Look at the facts of our case. Look at the facts of this case and go back and read the purpose. There is no possibility that anybody applying the facts of this case, the evidence, could come to any conclusion other than what this gap would, that the gap we are seeking to achieve is completely consistent with that purpose. 100%. The second following sentence says, as a result, and as evident in the evidence of submitters, this results in the need for a more complex regulatory framework to manage potential effects. Oh, sorry, that's the complexity issue. I already addressed that. And finally, I do not consider such extensions would ensure the effects of the development are cumulatively minor. Well, her landscape witnesses said it's non-existent. We have no effects. So how do these studies, and this is, Ms. Banks has made the mistake, I said in my submissions, of treating three or four extensions all at once and making generic statements. She hasn't gone to the facts. Second last point, earthworks. There was a bit of a theme in some of the stuff that, well, because the council isn't dealing with earthworks now, we can't allow these things because it might have adverse effects on earthworks. Once again, we didn't split this district pan. We didn't fracture it. It wasn't my client's decision to leave earthworks out of stage one and deal with earthworks in stage two. Council's decision. And now council is saying, effectively, because we council left earthworks till later, we council don't think you should get your relief because it might create a problem under earthworks. Let's be fair here. Not our decision to split the district, to fracture the process. Council's decision. Secondly, I'm talking two or three pylons, maybe four pylons with wires. How big an earthworks problem can there be? You dig a hole, you fill it with concrete. Thirdly, if it's a problem, which it isn't, add a little rule. We've put in two rules. Add another controlled activity line that says earthworks. Mr. Brown's going to give you the little addition in his evidence, in his summary. Because if there's a problem, which there isn't, you can put a temporary fix in now to give us our zoning. And when you come to stage two, you take it back out again. When they notify the earthworks chapter, which is meant to contain all of the earthworks provisions, it can be removed. Very simple fix, if it's a problem. Not a problem. Might be a problem in some of the other extensions, I have no idea. Not a problem on the MCS extension. Finally, in my legal submissions on the definition, I think everybody's in agreement that the passenger lift systems in the ski area subzone should not be caught by the height rule. And Ms. Banks accepted that, proposed an amendment. I don't mind you, had a very close look at the definitions and we came to the conclusion that she's exempted the pylons but not the wires in the cabins. We proposed a little minor amendment to fix that, not responded to in the council's opening. So I don't know whether they accepted it or whatever, but I stand by minor correction. Those are my submissions. Commissioners, I'm happy to turn to evidence or answer any questions.
Any questions?
I don't have any more questions.
No.
That was unusual, wasn't it?
Well, they're back from the deep, let's ask a question. I'll call, excuse me. Given the fact that of Dr. Reed's closing position, which puts them both on the same page, and given the fact that Mr. Espy's evidence is pretty short anyway, I told him not to prepare a summary. We're all on the same page. I said, turn up and answer any questions. Subject commissioners to one correction, just for the record. If you have his evidence, on page 9, I should have picked this up when I briefed it, but I missed it. Paragraph 3.7, bottom line, Mr. Espy describes the PDP regime. He describes the ONL, the ODP. He says the areas of the SACs are not part of the ONLs that surround them. I understand the intention that the same applies under the PDP. Could you just delete that sentence? I accept that that's not what the PDP is currently proposing. So apart from that, I think he's answered. Mr. Espy, just answering the questions. Thank you, sir.
I have got a couple, and I do acknowledge that we talked to Dr. Reed, that she basically said she's less concerned about the landscape effects that they're raised. But in a broader context, as an expert, the questions that we've been pursuing, and I've certainly been pursuing, is in landscape terms, why there's such a difference between Dr. Reed generally and all of the landscape architects, because those of you who are representing Smithers asking for extensions all have a quite different view. So I wouldn't mind just very quickly, your rationale, the criteria that you've used, why do you think you initially had a different view with Dr. Reed?
Well, I should say, I guess, I haven't examined any of the other submissions relating to ski area subzones, so I know very little about those. But in relation to this submission, Dr. Reed's initial evidence was on the basis of the original submission, which was that the extended ski area subzone would provide for all of the activities that are normally provided for in a ski area subzone. And I can understand where she's coming from there, that if the extended area that we're looking at, this 400 meter long corridor, if that was to include all manner of activities as provided for by the subzone, such as accommodation buildings and hotels and built form associated somehow with the ski area, I think that would have been problematic. I understand it was never the submitter's intention, so I didn't delve into that. But once she identified that, I can understand what she's saying, and the relief sought by the submitter was then changed to make it clear that really all that is sought is provision for this gondola alignment. And I think that at that point, Dr. Reed and I more or less came together.
And so there are a number of questions which I won't ask because I don't need to now because of where Dr. Reed got to, but one question I asked her and the other, Ms. Fruger and others, was this whole idea of what is inappropriate use of development within these ONLs, particularly in these areas which are, a lot of this sort of use for skiing, recreational activities. And I think you kind of get there, I think, in your evidence, so I'm reading it rightly. I think, can I ask the question, do you interpret, say, a gondola or some of these activities, while you need to look at the effects of them, they're almost an appropriate form of development in these areas? Not inappropriate.
Well, within the identified ski area subzones, provided the boundaries of those zones are drawn correctly, then I would say, in general terms, they're not inappropriate. Because of the existing development that has occurred over the decades, because the ski areas are already there, that's why. If the ski areas weren't there, then it would be a very different story.
Okay. Well, that's clear to me. Thank you.
No, I must say, Mr. Espy was very helpful in identifying the areas when we did the site visit. Made it all quite clear to me, so I've got no questions. There is one that's removed from his evidence, though. Just in considering the cumulative effects, did you, when you were doing that, or should we, perhaps, consider the development of the Mount Cadrona Special Zone as part of the environment?
Yes, I think you could.
We should.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it?
Thank you.
Mr. Espelli, can be excused. Call Mr. Brown, sir. He has a summary.
Summary is four pages, not two, but it was sort of shifting ground and more things to assess as the council's information came out. So I've gone a bit overboard, but if you let me read it out.
You go. Thanks, that's fine.
So this is a summary statement and it relates to the two parts of my primary evidence, which is relating to the word of the development control. Passenger lift systems and the narrow, scarier subzone corridor. Firstly, on part A, in the stream 2 hearings, I recommended that in rule 21.5, table 3, passenger lift systems should, along with farm buildings, be exempted from the standards for buildings. Without that exemption, passenger lift system pylons would need to meet the 8-metre height standard or require restricted discretion activity consent to breach. And this seems unreasonable given the control criteria for passenger lift systems to address effects on landscape values, and the purpose of the controlled activity status would be defeated because some pylons would almost certainly exceed 8 metres. Ms. Banks agrees with that in principle and recommends modifying the rule by exempting passenger lift system pylons, and I agree with her recommended modification and along with the further modifications proposed by Mr. Goldsmith. Part B, the corridor. The status of a passenger lift system is in the Mount Cajonas Station special zone likely to be controlled as part of Plan Change 52, and the rural zone inside the scarier subzone likely to be controlled as well, and in the rural zone outside, it's restricted discretionary. A passenger lift system connecting the special zone, which enables an urban development of commercial, residential, visitor accommodation, recreation, at the base of the mountain, with the Cajonas Ski Area Activities Facility near the top, would have a total distance of 5.125 kilometres, and that's a little more than the 3.8 that I said in my primary statement. Most of this, 92.2%, is within the special zone or the ski area subzone and would be controlled, and the remaining 7.8% is a 400 metre gap, so rural, in between, and that would be restricted discretionary. I consider that a passenger lift system linking the two areas is appropriate because a terminal at the Mount Cajonas Central Village area is easily walkable from the visitor accommodation, high density residential and other residential in the zone, and near to the growing cluster of activities around the valley entrance, the Snow Farm access road and the Cajonas Ski Area access road. It integrates activities and creates efficiencies by reducing traffic on the ski area road, reducing traffic safety risk, improving fuel usage and lowering emissions. And from Mr. Espy's evidence in landscape terms, the location is the most logical and expected place to experience a gondola because it would be viewed within a particular part of the valley that already accommodates considerable human modification. I disagree with Ms. Banks' view that the additional corridor is not appropriate. The circumstances of the corridor are very narrow and should not be considered in the same light as the broader question of the status of ski area activities in the rural zone outside of the ski area subzone. And these narrow circumstances include the Mount Cajonas station zone below the corridor and the special and the ski area subzone above it, the controlled status of passenger lift systems in those zones, the short length of the corridor, it's 400 metres of a total 5.1 kilometres, with no ecological issues, and the landscape evaluations. The controlled status is therefore preferable to the restricted discretionary status in this instance because it provides significantly greater certainty by avoiding the situation where the various consents for the same proposal are bundled into a restricted discretionary activity application despite 92.2% of the length otherwise being controlled. In her rebuttal paragraphs, Ms. Banks states that the proposed ski area subzone corridor that is my area A is inappropriate because it would be an overlay or a subzone of a subzone, plan administration inefficiencies, and is suggestive of a more complex and detailed higher order zone. And I strongly disagree with that. Area A represents two simple rules and a very minor amendment to the one map. It's not complex and detailed and will not cause any problems for a processing planner. In her summary statement, Ms. Bank states that she opposes all ski area subzone rezoning proposals irrespective of location and provides five reasons for this. In relation to the Mount Katrina Station corridor, I consider that none of her reasons are valid as follows, and my A, B, C, D, E are direct response to her five reasons. First, the Mount Katrina Station corridor does not broaden the purpose of the ski area subzone because it does not enable a range of other non-ski area, non-ski activities. It is for a passenger lift system only. Dr. Reed's expert opinion is that the gondola will have no adverse landscape effects. It is therefore appropriate to enable exclusion from the O&L assessment matters. Earthworks within the corridor would be for the purpose of constructing one or two pylons only, and for construction access, and not for broader ski activities such as a snowboard terrain park. The controlled status is appropriate for the 400 metre corridor for the reasons I've discussed, and avalanche control, safety management and snow grooming are not relevant to the corridor. In her summary paragraph, Ms. Banks discusses the Mount Katrina Station extension. She states that bundling the consents for the gondola into the restricted discretionary status is appropriate for large-scale infrastructure extending across wide geographic areas. I strongly disagree with this because the Mount Katrina Station corridor is very narrow with a single purpose. In the circumstances, the controlled activity status provides the opportunity for conditions to address the effects of the proposal. And further, in her paragraph 14, there are no significant landscape issues, referring back to Mr. Eastman and Dr. Reed, that necessitate the restricted discretionary status. Finally, in her summary paragraph, Ms. Bank states that it will be necessary to limit any extension to a passenger lift system only to avoid possible possible effects of earthworks and road car parking construction. The Mount Katrina Station corridor is limited to a passenger lift system only, and the rule enabling passenger lift systems as a controlled activity could be modified by adding a matter of control relating to earthquakes if considered necessary. The whole rule would therefore become, and 21.5.28 is the existing rule in Table 7, and the other two rules are as per my primary statement, and I've added in 21.5x a matter of control for earthworks, which is the extent to which earthworks modify the landform and the effects of siltation, runoff and erosion during construction. And I just simply borrow those words from other parts of the rural zone, so they're already there for other activities. I therefore maintain my view that Area A, the Area A SASZ corridor linking the Mount Katrina Station Zone with the ski area subzone and Katrina is appropriate, and is consistent with Ms. Banks' principles for considering the various requests for ski area subzone extensions, the higher order provisions of the proposed plan, and Part 2 of the Act. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. I do understand what you're asking for. The question I've got probably comes down to the activity status, in the sense of the council's position may not yet be the whole panel's, and as you know, I would haven't been involved in the other decisions, other hearings and recommendations. So is it fair to say what you're really looking for in terms of an activity status is a consistency? I know you're asking for control, yeah. But in terms of private plan change 52, which you said in your evidence, you said it's likely to get compared to control because there's no submissions. Which, with respect, I thought that was rather presumptuous because the hearings panel, whoever heads it, might decide that control is not the appropriate status, and therefore relying on that in terms of putting control activity status here, you may end up being out of whack. So is it that you're really seeking a consistency, i.e. if it was determined, say, that the controlled activity which is being proposed was RD, that the bit should be RD in the middle? Because I don't know whether the panels... Well, I'm just speculating how much you can take into account what might come out of Plan Change 52. So you might end up with something completely different, and so you end up with an inconsistency.
Well, yes, consistency is the end goal,
right?
So that we're not being bundled into a
higher order,
more stringent, right, test for a very small percentage of the whole length of the corridor.
Right. That's what I understand. So I think what's open to the panel is really talk about what the availability status is if we go with the extension.
Yes.
I think that's the only question I have. I haven't seen the rest.
Yeah, I've got no questions.
The only question I've got is, in your proposed method of giving effect to this, you see the corridor as being ski area subzoned with limitations. Is that necessary, or could you just say within the identified area on the map it is a whatever activity status to have a passenger assistant? And then we overcome that problem.
I suppose that could work. The O&L overlay, there would need to be some express provision about that if it's still going to remain as a rural zone. That would be my only comment on that.
Yes, but there are all sorts of things about as controlled activities in the rural zone. But it wouldn't be the first controlled activity in the rural zone.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw that having... either way, there's still going to be some demarcation on a planning map and some sort of rule. So when I devised the submission, because looking back, it was my thinking on this, I thought that just having a small strip of SASF was the cleanest method, and then that's evolved somewhat since the submission to narrow the activity down to just a passenger lift system within it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown.
Any comment I want to make, Sarah, is in response to the question put, and note that Mr. Brown's evidence was it was likely that PC52 would result in that. And I would just add to that and say, you know, we understand it can't be guaranteed, but given that plan change has been notified, given that the landowner owns all of the land within it, given that none of the neighbours, a few neighbours, have expressed any concern at that point, I would stand by my submission that Mr. Brown's evidence about likelihood is a fair assessment. And secondly, my client's point of view is very clearly that it's a risk. We understand that's a risk, and you might end up with control here and restricted discretion here. That doesn't take away from the fact that control here and here is what the submission is seeking. And that is also in part why Mr. Espy's evidence, if you read it carefully, you know, didn't actually just address the extension. It talked about the appropriate place for a gondola corridor in this area.
Thank you. I suppose, I probably should apologise if we've been a bit presumptuous. I should have re-asked in a different way to say, how much do you think the panel can rely on the outcome of the different process? I suppose that's what I was really getting to.
My submission is likely.
I suppose the other follow-up thing is what is the situation in the operative Mountain Drive Special Zone?
It provides for a gondola base station. It's right. Discretionary activity. It's just a change in status. It isn't putting something new in there. It's always been there. It's just a change in status.
Right. That's not a zone that I've ever needed to look at. So.
As a matter of interest, your question, I did actually go away and research with the panel on a private plan change was constrained by the scope of submissions, but I came to the conclusion that it wasn't, so.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Now, I will adjourn until 2 p.m. on Monday, the whatever it is, next Monday. 15th, yes. In Wanaka.
Life starts getting interesting.